Glad you're here. So thankful to be with you. Thankful to those that are visiting, that are from various places. Before we begin, just pause and let me express my appreciation for me and Carla being invited to come back here. Y'all given me a lot of gifts. When we came down here, I was a high school football coach and a baseball coach, and y'all said, come on down. You gave me a gift and an opportunity a lot of churches would have never offered, and now here it is, and you've asked us to come back and spend this week with you, and we're so thankful. We love you, and we think about you all the time. We talk about you all the time, and we're really thankful to be back with you, and we've looked forward to this for so long, and excited for this week. As I mentioned last night, what we're going to be talking about all throughout the week is just different things that we have to overcome in this world. We just sang the song, faith overcomes, faith is the victory. But there's a lot of things that has to be overcome. And we're going to just look at different things each night, different ways that we're tested and tried, and things that we have to overcome in order to stay faithful so we can claim that victory that Ronnie just led us in the song about. I want us to start this morning. There's no particular order to any of these. But to start with, let's just talk about disillusionment and the fact that is something we have to overcome. Can you imagine? And it might be that you met someone, but maybe an idealist of personality, and they're taught and they're baptized, and they have this opinion that now that I'm a Christian, now that I'm a child of God, all of my problems are going to disappear. And it takes about 37 seconds to figure out that's not true. But if we have that mindset, it can lead to some disillusionment. We learn quicker. We learn real quick that God is not some genie that just in a puff of smoke is going to get rid of all of our problems. But while we're figuring that out, some disillusionment can set in. And there's a lot of people who've lost their souls because of that. And we need to at least look at that. And let's talk about that a little bit. To truly understand what disillusionment is. That's not a word that we're familiar with. But to better understand it, let's remind ourselves what an illusion is. An illusion is something that's not real. An illusion is a mirage. And what disillusionment is, we're letting things that were never promised to us in the first place lead to disappointment, lead to discouragement, lead to bitterness. The whole concept behind a disillusion is that it's based on something that was never real to begin with. Pressing on to the higher ground. That's real. That's not an illusion. That's a promise made from the Creator of heaven and earth. But there are things that God never promised us. We talk about God's promises all along. Sometimes we might just need to be reminded of things He never promised us. Because a lot of times it's the things He never promised us that we just have an illusion of that leads to our falls, leads to our stumbles. Disillusionment is a problem. So what we're going to do in this first study is we're going to try to get rid of some of the illusions. We're going to remind ourselves. We're going to talk about some things that were never ours to begin with, never promised to us in any way. If we can understand that better, when they happen to us, the disappointment, hopefully, and the disenchantment and the bitterness, maybe we can control that a lot better. Get rid of the illusion, and we will get rid of the disillusion. So let's talk about some of those today. Let's start with the physical realm. And let's look at some various ways that if we're not careful, we can maybe have some illusions about. And that is that we're going to have good health all of our life. Are there anybody who'd like to raise their hand and combat that? No, you're not going to have good health all your life. And the issue is that God never promised us that. God never told us that we were going to have good health all of our life just because we became a Christian. That's an illusion. And we got to get rid of that. And before we begin, just as an aside, there are people in this room who are among my heroes because of how you are handling your health issues. God never promised us that it was going to be all so nice. And we have Bible examples of it. Not only did God not promise us any illusion about continual health, He gave us examples of men like Job, who lost everything but his breath. He gave us examples of men like Paul. Are you with me in verse 7? Remember, Paul, an apostle, one not just gifted with the holy spiritual gifts, but the ability to pass those gifts on. Think about the things Paul did. Verse 7, lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations. Let's just pause for a minute. Have we ever thought about that? The fact that there needed, that the apostles needed to be humbled. You're a gift speaker. Or a tongue speaker. You're an interpreter of tongues. You can heal sick. You can raise the dead. You speak through the Spirit. Can you imagine maybe some pride that might be potential? Evidently, that's a fact. Because that's what Paul is saying. To make sure I didn't over-exalt myself. To make sure the things I do doesn't puff me up. There was given unto me, verse 7, a thorn in the flesh. We don't know what that is. We don't know exactly specifically what it was. But there's a lot of thorns in the flesh. Some of you are suffering from them. And your thorn might not be my thorn. But Paul had one. And apparently a serious one. There was given unto me a thorn in the flesh. Catch this. The messenger of Satan to trouble me. To buffet me. Don't blame God for your illnesses. Don't blame God for your health issues. Sin has made this world a world of disease and a world of death. And God is not the cause of that sin. And therefore, God is not the cause of all those consequences that come from sin. And Paul recognized that. I've got a thorn in the flesh. I wished I didn't have it. But he never pointed his finger at God. He understood where it came from. A thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan. Don't be illusioned that we're not going to have these thorns. The beautiful thing, Paul didn't get bitter about this, nor did Job. We talked about him earlier. Job didn't get bitter even when his wife almost shamed him to the point of it. Remembered who his creator was. Paul did not get bitter about this. He prayed about it. I know you've prayed about some of your things. I know we would like some things to be different. But the prayers were answered, no. And instead of getting disillusioned, instead of getting bitter, verse 9, God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. And instead of getting bitter and upset and disillusioned, what he says is, most gladly, therefore, I will glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. We could have some physical disillusions. Don't think you're going to be healthy all your life. That's an illusion. It's a mirage. Don't lose your soul over such a thing because God never promised us anything differently. What about another physical one? What about prosperity? Turn to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians 3. I'm a Christian. I'm a child of God. God loves me. I'm going to get the nicest job at the plant. I'm going to get a cushy job. I'm going to get a lot of riches from that. And I'm going to have the nicest bosses wherever I go. And every promotion that runs down the pipe, I'm going to interview for that and I'm going to get it. Because I'm a child of God. Can you imagine someone maybe thinking like that? Because if that's what we're thinking, that's an illusion and it's going to quickly lead to some disillusionment. God never promised us that. In chapter 3, we're going to skip down and pick up in the middle of a bigger text. But look in verse 22. He's talking to Christians in various stages of life. And in verse 22, he says, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. Now, we make applications about that, and rightfully so. We make applications about that between workers and bosses and all that kind of thing. But do you understand what's being described here, right? Christians who were literally still slaves. Slaves, you obey your master in the flesh. God never gave any illusionment that because we became a Christian, everything in our life is going to become sweet. Now, what he's letting people know is, you were a slave when you were taught, you were a slave when you were converted, and you may live the rest of your life as a slave. and you serve well. You serve the best of your ability. And he goes on, I'm paraphrasing, but he goes on to say, I want you to understand you're really serving me. I'm your true master. Saying you serve your earthly master and you serve him well. But here's the point. God never even made an illusion but that we would have freedom in the flesh, much less that we're going to have all these other blessings of a material nature. That's a mirage. And if we've got that in our head, disillusionment's coming. Understand what was promised and what was not promised. Turn back to Genesis 5. Another physical illusion that some of us may have is that because we're a Christian, we're not going to have to deal with death. We're not going to have to deal with loved ones who are not with us anymore. Genesis chapter 5, the best way I ever heard it described, Genesis 5 is like a fast forward button. It's a genealogy chapter that gets us from Adam's son to Noah. And it does it in about 500 words or so. A lot of centuries passing in Genesis 5. And here's how it can happen so fast. Because we get introduced to somebody, and then look at the last phrase in verse 8. He died. And then it goes on, but he had a son. Verse 11, he died. He had a son, verse 12. Verse 14, the last three words, and he died. And that's the whole chapter. This one had a son, he dies. This one has a son, he dies. And you know what's going to happen? Me and you, put your name there. We were born, we lived, and we died. And God is pretty upfront about that from the beginning. The book of beginnings lets us know about a lot of deaths. In the flesh, life is not the promise. It's a spiritual life that we're aiming toward. But here's some physical things that if we're not careful can disillusion us. And we need to get beyond that. But it goes beyond physical. What about some social things? Turn to 2 Timothy 1. We are social people. We need each other. We want company. Especially those of like-mindedness. But they can let us down too. If we have an illusion that Christians will never disappoint us, I know you know it, I'm just here to remind, that's a mirage. Christians are going to lie to you. Christians are going to make you cry. Christians are going to actively mistreat you and cheat you. And if we believe anything other than that, we're believing a promise that God never made us. Somebody else may have said it to you, but God never made that promise to us. That's a mirage, it's an illusion, and if we believe it, we're going to be discouraged. We're going to fall if we base our faith on the actions of others. Are you with me in 2 Timothy chapter 4? This is what Matt read for us earlier. 2 Timothy 4, in verse 10. This is, remember, Paul, the last writings that we have of him. It might not be his last writings. It's his last recorded writings. Can you imagine all the emotion going through his mind? Could you imagine sitting down and writing some of your last words? And in verse 10, he says, Demas has forsaken me. Now, we're not going to take the time to do this, but there are other epistles. Paul called Demas his fellow laborer. They traveled together. They went through the fires together. They went through persecution together. And Demas ultimately, in Paul's mind, betrayed him, forsook him. He was hurt by that. And here he is in this late stage of life, and he hasn't forgotten it. Drop down to verse 14. Alexander the coppersmith did me much evil. I don't know what the evil was, but Paul hadn't forgot it. Now, I'm using him as an example. The same one who did not allow himself to get disillusioned over physical thorns in the flesh. He has not let social disillusionment get him either. Paul didn't live his life under the assumption that people weren't going to hurt him. Even close people. Even fellow laborers. even Christians. Now, he has a couple of options. When Demas forsakes and men like Alexander do him harm, what he can do is he can get bitter. He can take his ball and go home. He can just throw his hands up in the air and says, I'm done with the whole business. Or what he can remember is, my faith was never in Demas. My faith was never in Alexander the coppersmith. My faith was in the Son of God. And if your faith is in anything else, that's an illusion. Because others are going to disappoint. And others are going to hurt. And we've got to remember who our faith is in. Turn back to chapter 1. Another social illusion that we might have is not that only that they would not hurt us. But the opposite of that is that there's always going to be somebody with us. Somebody's always going to, my brethren are always going to have my back. My brethren will always be arm in arm with me, taking up the battle flag. Do you have that illusion? Because that's not based in reality. In 2 Timothy 1, look in verse 15. This you know, that all they which are in Asia have turned away from me. And he calls some by name. Here's Paul in his chains. Here's Paul in prison. And by the way, those in Asia, you know who that's talking about? Now, we don't have the specifics here, but some churches in Asia you'll be familiar with. Ephesus, Paul spent a lot of time there. Laodicea, Colossians, and there are a lot of churches in the area that you would know about. He said, they're not with me. Look in chapter 4, get some specifics on it. In chapter 4, verse 16, at my first offense, no man took my part. No man stood with me. All men deserted me, forsook me. Now, apparently what that's referring to is the first time that Paul stood before Caesar. And when I had my first defense, when he stood before Caesar the first time, he is standing alone. He goes on to say, nobody took my part. They deserted me. You think that discouraged him? Would that not hurt you? Would that not disappoint you? The beatings you've taken, the imprisonment you've taken so that you could teach the gospel. And now people that you have actively taught, people you literally, with no exaggeration, people you've literally risked your life for, now they back out on you? They desert you when you need them? Don't tell me that wouldn't affect you. Would it cause you to lose your soul? Would you quit because of it? If you have the illusion that you're always going to have somebody standing shoulder to shoulder, that's the problem with an illusion. And Paul did not have that. He knew who his faith was in. And that's the beautiful thing of it. You drop down to verse 17. The very next verse. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. You have the illusion that your brethren will always be there. I hope they are. I hope you support each other. I hope we spend the rest of our life here on earth encouraging one another. But should the day come when your brethren desert you, don't lose your soul over that. That was never promised you. The one who was promised is in verse 17. The Lord standing with you. The Lord strengthening you. When you find yourself alone at the work site, what Paul's telling us is you're really not alone. When you find yourself alone in a certain family dynamic, you're not really alone. You're standing with the Lord. We understand this conceptually. Sometimes we're with tears maybe in our eyes, we'll say, I wish I could go through this for you. I'd go through this for you if I could. I wished I was going through it instead of you. You know what that's an acknowledgement of? You're going to have to do it yourself. I'd go through it for you if I could, but you can't. There are things we have to do alone. Sometimes we offer in our prayers. We ask God to comfort some. What's the phrase? Comfort them as only you can. What's that an acknowledgement? Is that we have a shortcoming. There's something that, as much as we would like, there's some things out of our hands. But we understand the concept that we're not always going to have somebody there with us. Don't be illusioned by anything less than that. Physical, there are some illusions we've got. Make sure we get rid of them. Social, there are some illusions that we've got. Don't be bitter when those times come. They were never promised us to begin with. Let's get a bit closer. Let's talk about our family. Turn to Matthew chapter 13. It's possible to have the illusion that our family members will obey and stay faithful. Isn't that what we want? That's our desire. I don't have any. That's my desire. I can't say it any clearer. That's my desire. I want my kids to be faithful. I want them to serve all their life. And I know that's what you want. I want them to believe. I want them to obey. I want them to serve. And I want them to serve till they die. And everybody in this room has that desire. But in Matthew 13, as you well are familiar with, the first parable Jesus taught, the parable of the sower, how often, if ever, have we thought of that parable in the family dynamic? Here's what Jesus taught from the first parable on. You talk about not presenting an illusion. In verse 19, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and understands it not, and the wicked one comes and catches away that which was sown in his heart, talking about the hard ground, the wayside. This is he which receives the seed by the wayside. When's the last time we acknowledge that might be somebody in our family? They will not listen. They won't let it in. Where did God promise us that everybody in our family was going to listen? Look in verse 20. He that receives the word in the stony places, the same as he that hears the word and with joy receives it. Yet he has no root in himself. It endures for a while, but when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, straightway they stumble. When's the last time we acknowledge that could be somebody in our family? Somebody, they listen, they hear, they say, yes, that's true, and they obey it. And they serve for a while. But then something happens. Maybe it's disillusionment. Maybe it's physical things like it's not what they want. Maybe it's some social things. Maybe they hold their brethren accountable for something God never promised them. And they are gone. Where did God promise us that won't be our kids? Our parents. Look at verse 22. He also that received the word among the thorns is he that hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word out, and it becomes unfruitful. We all know people. We all love people. We all have people with the same last names as us who served and served well. And then the world got its grips back on them. The thorns grew in and choked out the fruit, and they are not fruitful anymore. Who ever promised us that that wouldn't be our family? We read this parable, we teach this parable, we apply this parable, but if we're not careful, we think of it in some abstract way. This is our families. This is not just the world in general. This is our families too. Look even more clearer. Look back in Matthew 10. Look back to chapter 10. Again, God did not give us any mirages about this. He never hid this fact from us. Matthew 10, verse 35. Actually, back up into verse 34. Let's pick up one verse earlier. Do not think that I've come to send peace on the earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. I come to set a man at variance against his father. Daughter against mother. Daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. A man's foes will be those of his own house. Apparently, that applies to everybody but my family. Apparently, this applies to everybody but your family. That's an illusion. And if we get wrapped up in that, we will fall because of it. because we're going to be sadly disappointed. No, this is my family, and this is your family, and these warnings are for every last one of us. Verse 37. Here's, as the saying goes, here's where the rubber meets the road. He that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Jesus never hid the fact that our family might not be what they ought to be. That people we love enough to die for them may not be what they ought to be. And then he gives us the option. Now, what are you going to choose? You're going to choose your father and your mother? You're going to choose your son and your daughter? You're going to choose your best friend from high school? Who will you choose? Because if you choose them, you're not worthy. And there's a lot that goes into that. The best parents have kids who make bad choices. And God never hid that from us. The best spouses have people that are unfaithful to them. God never hid that from us. And don't live your life in the illusion that your family is going to all serve and serve well. I hope they do. Tell God thank you. And continue to be faithful. Continue to take advantage of those spiritual blessings that come in that fellowship. But for most people you know, and probably for yourself, you know that's not the way it is. God never promised you anything less than that. As a matter of fact, he told us it was going to happen. And he told us the choice to make when it does happen. So will we become bitter? My children fall away. My parents fall away. My wife falls away. Am I going to become so disillusioned, so bitter, so disappointed that I fall with them? Are you going to fall away with them? There's the choices. And there's the question. And there's the seriousness of this. God never promised you that your family was going to serve. What he's done is he's made it possible for you to serve and serve him well. Take advantage of that chance. Take advantage of that opportunity. What about the congregation? Go from the family to the family right here. Let's talk about the congregational illusions that can pop up. Turn to Revelation chapter 2. We can have this illusion, especially maybe a new convert. The illusion that the local church will never have any problems. And when problems do come to the local church, it just blows their mind. And they fall away. They lose their faith because of those issues. God never promised that the local church wasn't going to have problems. The local church is made up of people. And the people in local churches have weaknesses. And they are imperfect. And because of that, there are going to be some issues that come up. It's the universal church where there's perfection. Those whose names in the book of life, blamelessness. But in the local church, there are things to be dealt with. And God didn't hide that from us either. In Revelation chapter 2, verse 4, to the church at Ephesus, I have something against you. You've left your first love. Look at verse 20. Church at Thyatira. I have a few things against you because you suffer the woman Jezebel who calls herself a prophetess to teach and to seduce my servants to commit immorality. Look at chapter 3, verse 1. Church at Sardis. You have a name that you live, but you're dead. Chapter 3, verse 16. Laodicea. You are lukewarm. You make me sick. I've got to spit you out. I can't stomach you anymore. That's how serious that it is to be lukewarm in God's sight. Sometimes as gross it is, I'm not trying to be gross, but we know what that feeling is. The idea, if I could just throw up, I'd feel better. I know you felt that. Do you understand that's what God said? I vomit you out. You can't stay in me anymore. These were local churches, and there were some serious, serious issues there. God never pulled the rug on that. He never shielded us from the fact that there would be issues among God's people. But he's taught us how to work together. He's taught us how to love each other. And we've got to remove the illusion. There are other churches. Think about the churches. What about the problems in Corinth? Was that a church with some problems? Well, chapters 1 through 4, there was division. Chapters 5, there was such immorality, the whole town knew about it. They didn't act on it. Chapter 6, you've got brethren going to court among each other. Aaron, they're basically going to war in public against each other over a matter. In chapter 7, there was marriage issues and on and on and on. What about the issues going on in Galatia? They had allowed Judaizing teachers to come in. And basically, every church we read about had things to overcome. The church at Oak Grove will have things to overcome. They have come through some things, and they will again until that trump sounds. All of these things could be the very thing that test our faith. The very thing that test our conviction. The very thing that trust, that test our trust. And what we've looked at today in all these various realms, how sad is it to think that we would lose our soul over a mirage that God never promised us? Let's not do that. Let's wake up from that. Too many fall away. And so some questions we have to internally ask ourselves. How well are we teaching people to prepare for these mirages? Grounding them? Is there something we're doing to leave people vulnerable? Are we leaving people ripe for these illusions to take control? Because what we've got to make sure we never do is don't confuse what God promised us with what He never did. He promised us forgiveness. He promised us a home in heaven. He promised us fellowship. He promised us a relationship. Abba, Father, Father. He promised us that we would be priests. He made a lot of promises to us. If this was a Bible class, just throw out the questions. There's a lot of things He promised us. But to lose our soul over discouragement, over something that was never promised to us at all, how sad is that? Maintain your faith. Maintain your conviction. Keep pressing on toward those promises we do have. And don't let this nonsense cause our souls to be lost. Get your songbooks out. There are faces here I don't know. I've been gone a good while now. And there are faces here I'm not familiar with. I don't know who is who. Even some of the familiar faces, I'm not sure who is where. I don't know who is a Christian, who is not. I don't know who's serving and who's going through the motions. But you know, and you can rest assured, God knows. Take advantage of the breath that we've got. So if you're not a Christian, but you believe heaven is real, you're not a Christian, but you believe judgment is real, you're not a Christian and you believe hell is real and you don't want to be there. You believe Jesus is God's Son. You just hadn't confessed that. You believe it. You just hadn't acted. You believe that it was your sin that caused Him to have to die and bleed out. You just hadn't took advantage of that death. Be baptized today and wash those sins away. If you are a Christian, but maybe you've got some illusions. And maybe those illusions they just eat at you. They've hindered your ability to be as faithful as you ought to be. But now you realize that was never what your faith was in to begin with. It's called repenting. It's one of the tenets of the gospel. Take advantage of the breath we've got. We have a lot of work while day is here. Night's coming. Work while it's day. We've still got day. And you can take advantage of everything that needs to be done. Do it while we stand and sing.